Alrighty. Shabbat Shalom again. And Shabbat Shalom to all those who will hear this with us later. Today I'm going to give a message called Community Living. I would like to start in Jeremiah 6 and the beginning of verse 16. He says, "So says Yahweh, stand by the ways and see and ask for the old paths where the good way is, and walk in it, and you will find rest to your souls." So, in the end time, and you know, since Yahweh opened this door now about a year and a half ago to Mount Sinai, he's really focusing on me about these old paths, going back to the old paths, because that's what Mount Sinai is all about. You know, everything goes in the circular, and everything started at Mount Sinai, now everything is finishing up at Mount Sinai. The first wilderness experience where the Israelites failed, the second wilderness experience where we will succeed. So that's what Yahweh is telling us. And the key is, as we get into communal living today, are we going for those old paths? And to be honest with you, and it is a little discouraging for me at times, because we have an awesome congregation, wonderful people, some of the most wonderful, loving, caring people you ever meet in the world. And yet, in our congregation, there's only about 10% of the brethren that are living in community. And it's not the most can't. You know, most can go into community. There are some brethren that are actually leaving their area, some leaving America and going to a community somewhere. But like in the third world, a lot of these people could all live in community, and yet they choose not to, you know. And some areas, people, they start out slow, but we're doing this now for 10 years. And my fear is, I really see a divide from the brethren that are living in community to the brethren that aren't, in, as far as growth. Because living in community will force you to grow. And I think one of the main reasons people don't want to live in community is they don't want to be exposed. There's things they're not overcoming or don't want to overcome, and they don't want to be exposed. So I want to get into that today on communal living and some things to go over and to think about in a community setting. And you really can't talk about community living, especially in the end time, without starting off with Qumran. You know, at the school, we had a whole course on Qumran, and ever since I became a believer, I've been amazed with Qumran, because you look and you see something that Yahweh hid 2,000 years ago in caves down there, where, believe me, there are thousands of caves, and just about everything that's been hidden in any of those caves was found and stolen and taken. There's been grave robbers for years. And those caves down in Qumran are not that hard to get into. And for those, you know, it's not like these things were hidden in the ground. They were just put in these jars. For them to stay there for 2,000 years untouched and come out the very day that Israel's becoming a nation is Yahweh's, you know, hand in that. So for me, I always knew there's got to be something in there. And when you look at Qumran, and I always said, you know, if you're going to have community in the end time, it has to somewhat be based on Qumran documents, at least in principle, because why did Yahweh put him there? And I do see that Qumran had the truth in a lot of ways. They certainly had the Torah. They kept the Torah very strict. They had judicial order, more than anything I've ever seen in my lifetime. They had commitment. They had dedication. You know, they lasted there for close to 270 years, and they would be there today. The only thing that stopped them was the Romans coming in and destroying them and physically making them move. They had righteous character, you know. So they had everything. The only thing I wonder, and this is just a question I'm throwing out, I'm not saying whether they had it or not, but I wonder how much love they had there. You know, I mean, they're all men, you know, so men do write different than women. You know, like I said, men are visionaries, women are detail, you know. So, but like when I read the documents, like I see it that a man is writing this stuff. You know, I mean, it's cut and dry, and it's do it this way, and it's if you don't, this happens, you know. So, and I don't know, because like I said, when you read it, the one thing is I say, even though they had a lot of rules and regulations, there's no record of anyone ever wanting to leave the community or people even being thrown out. And that's amazing that it lasted that long. But I really don't know. I don't know. I mean, you read it and there was things, but it's a question I have. How much, you know, true agape love was there? Something to study later. So in order to have a community that's going to be blessed by Yahweh and the Ruach, there has to be two elements. The first element has to be judicial order. If you don't have judicial order, you're not going to have a community. And we've had, before we've even started communities around the world, we've had things where just people living near each other or not really even calling a community and wanting to live near each other, and every time it broke up because there wasn't judicial order. If you don't have a judicial order structure, you will never, ever, ever have, and that's in, I think, anything in life, and no matter what it is, a business you're starting, you know, anything you're in. So you can't just be a group of people that have similar beliefs. And this is what I try to share with people from the West, because people from the West, a lot of times they're asking, where are our communities in Babylon? And we don't have any communities in Babylon, you know? And not just because Yahweh says flee Babylon, because I did when I first started years ago, well before we even left America, you know, close to 30 years ago when I was thinking of community living. And while I saw really fast that you will never ever have a community with people with a Babylonian mindset. And I'm not blaming the people, I'm blaming the culture. Because it's not in Western culture to give everything you have. You know, it's just not. And again, in the third world, as we're going to see, there's other problems they have, you know, because there's problems with not having anything, you know, in starting something and having that attitude also. So you have to have judicial order. You know, you can't just be a bunch of people that are looking for similar things. It will never work, because even though you might have similar aspects in certain things, you're going to have different aspects in other things, particularly doctrine. And I'm amazed sometimes when I see, like, there's a lot of groups out there today that meet for Sukkot, and some of them meet, there's 200 people coming, 300 people, with all different kinds of beliefs and whatnot. And I remember asking one person that goes to one of these things, and I said, well, how many people come to services? He said, oh, hardly anybody. You know, I'm like, well, what are they doing there? Well, they're really just coming for Sukkot. But I said, why doesn't anyone go to service? Because one guy will get up and say one thing, one guy will get up and say something else. You know, it's just total confusion that happened there. So, and the second element needed to ensure a successful blessed community by Almighty Yahweh is 100% unconditional love. So, the message I gave at the school on the language of agape, which I think I got more feedback from that message than just about any message I've ever given, from everywhere. I can't believe all the different people and elders and all over the world. And it's a foundation, you know, it's a foundation, because we're heading into a new time period. And as Yahweh is pouring out His Spirit, you know, agape is one of the things, but I realize the difference between true agape and false agape is faith. Faith is even more the cornerstone than agape. You know, I know it says faith, hope, and love, but the greatest of these is love. But without faith, you know what you get? You get the Christian love. You get the love that will allow sin in the congregation, that won't deal with matters, that will, it's not real love. So you've got to have faith, because faith is the truth of Yahweh that never changes. And it's faith that's going to keep you from never, ever compromising in something. So Mark 12 and verse 28, I'm going to start the second part of that verse. It says, knowing that he answered them well, he questioned them, what is the first commandment of all? And Yeshua answered him, the first of all the commandments is, hear Israel, Yahweh our Elohim is Yahweh Yikad, and you will love Yahweh your Elohim with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind, and with all your strength, right? So it's your heart, which is the deepest, you know, part of your being, what means the most to you, your soul, your life, your mind, with your thoughts, and your strength. Meaningly, whatever your gifts are in life, if you're really loving Yahweh first, you're going to use your gifts to serve Him before you serve yourself. This is the first commandment. And I say this to people when you're thinking about a job, whether you're a construction worker, whether you're, you know, a nurse or a doctor, whether, you know, you're a computer programming. Yes, you know, we do have to work 6 days and you have to pay your bills, but at the end of the day, you got to work for Yahweh first. So whatever your gifts are, you should be working first for Yahweh, and then secondly for yourself. And the second is like it, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. there is not another commandment greater than these. So again, you know, we sometimes I've seen groups, not necessarily our group, but I've seen other groups that will split up over something as simple as head coverings or something like that. And here it is, it says these two commandments, there is not a greater commandment than these. Not to say the other ones aren't important, but this is what the foundation of everything goes on. So there, in order to have communal living, you have to have a one for all and all for one attitude. You know, that any resource that is there, you know, and Yahweh gives us resources individually, but we should never think in our mind, like it says, you use what you don't possess. That any resource you have, if it's needed by the community, that you would be willing to share it. So again, we don't have to feel, I know at times some brethren that were blessed with many physical things and they almost felt guilty. And I said, don't feel guilty. Yahweh can't bless everybody with physical things for one reason, because a lot of people wouldn't be faithful with it. So if Yahweh is the same way, if he's blessing you with knowledge, it's a gift you use for somebody else. If he's blessing you with wisdom, it's a gift you use. And if he's blessing you with mammon, there's somebody that has been in our life for a long time, really, really solid person that we know, and this person realizes it. You know, I mean, they have a very, very high important job, and because of their job, their time is very limited, but they really use their resources for Yahweh's work. And that's a blessing to them. And, you know, they're doing it. So praise Yahweh for that. So we have to make sure, you know, that, like I said, if something is needed, you cannot start a community with a Babylonian mindset. And like I said, with the Babylonian mindset, it is a mindset of possession. You know, we don't want to think of it, but it really is. You know, that's why when you're thinking, you know, in life, it's so sad that most people spend the 40 years of their life working, just thinking about retirement. That's the only thing on their mind. I know somebody that's very close to me that is in their 60s, and they're still thinking, oh, when I get to be 78, and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, you know, little did they know their life would be taken that night. And even if you did, you know, your quality of life, every decade, it does change. You do not have the same strength when you're 40 than you did at 30, when you're 50 is 40, 60 is 50. And once you start hitting those bigger numbers, you know, look out, you know, because the average person doesn't even live usually past 75, 76. I see that with my dad, you know, as he's going on 91 this year. And, you know, you can have your mind and all your wits to you, but physically you just can't do what you did before. So what I always say is you can't just get there, you got to enjoy the ride. You know, you don't want to waste 40 years of the best years of your life just thinking about being older when you may never even get there. You got to enjoy the ride. Everything you do, do with all your might. And in a community setting, one of the greatest wonderful lessons we get to learn is the law of synergy. You know, it is amazing, and it's a Yahweh-given principle what synergy can do. That with one can do alone, two people can do three times. So I might not be able to lift this table by myself, but two of us might be able to lift two tables, and three of us maybe four tables, and 10 of us, you know, can lift maybe a car. It's amazing what synergy can do. And that's, like I say, one plus one with synergy, it doesn't just equal three, it could equal 30, it could equal 300. It's unlimited. It depends on who that synergy is with and how you're doing it. And it's just amazing how much can be done. So the law of synergy we learn in communal living. And again, beside Yahweh, like it says, our second greatest asset in life is each other, you know, in the community center. Each member will be blessed to experience that together. And the psalm I just read for the Torah reading, behold how good and how pleasant it is for brethren living together, even in unity. And I always say, it's not a miracle for brethren to live together, but it is a miracle to live together in unity. Because usually, at least what I've seen in my whole life, and even my life as a believer, it never worked. It failed every time. And here we are, we're 10 years into this end time experience, and not one community has failed so far. And not only that, they're getting stronger. You know, where we started out, just with a handful, four or five, six communities. And I never planned on it. It was the Africans that came to Israel saw the kibbutz and they wanted to do it. They said, we're going to do it. I'm like, great, I'll help you. And then others saw it and they wanted to do it. So I've never pushed it. And even in the local areas where I'll go to a place and brethren will say, oh, you know, the other brethren, they don't want to join. I'm like, don't force them. You'll ruin it. It's got to be in your heart. You either got to want this, because that's what the kingdom of Yahweh is all about. And believe me, in human nature, if we're all honest with ourselves, and I'll be the first one to admit it, I like being by myself. I really do. I've been like that my whole life. Put me on the top of the mountain, I can live by myself without anybody ever around me. Just give me a Bible, and that's all I need for here to eternity. You know, I don't need to be famous. I don't need to travel. I don't need to do anything except have my Bible with Yahweh at the top of that mountain. That's it. But I know I'm not going to change. I know I'm not going to grow. I know I'm not going to make His kingdom like that. So I force myself, knowing that it's not what I really want, but it's what Yahweh really wants. And eventually I know it'll be what I really want. But if I'm not honest with myself, if I don't look at my own short fallings and shortcomings, I'm never going to change. And that's what it's about here. So it's about change. That really is what community living is about. It's about being able to come together as believers, and each of us, where we need to change, helping each other in that. So like I said, it's not a miracle for brethren to live together, but it is a miracle to live together in harmony and unity. Community can only work when we as a people, inspired by the rock of Yahweh, we put our own will aside and seek the will of Him. And that's why I say, when people come into a community, and I really encourage all the elders and the leaders of the communities to have an application. You know, when somebody's coming in, you need to know what they're looking for, and they need to know what you're looking for. And this is what happened in some of our communities where it didn't work out with somebody. And it was simply that big problems could have been avoided if the people knew what was expected of them, and the people in the community knew what was going to be expected by the people that were coming. So we have to put our own will aside, and that's the problem. I know in the times we're living in, some people are scared. You know, they're getting nervous because of what's happening in world events, and they're looking for a safety net. That's not a reason to go to community. It really isn't. And it's something where when you leave Babylon, you don't even realize the things you have to change until you're out of there. And everyone has told me that, including myself. Every single person I know that has left Babylon has said that. Wow, as they're leaving, they're thinking of A, B, and C. And then after that, they're like, man, I never realized I got to work on this. I never realized this or that. So it's like anything else. You can't see the forest from the trees. So you have to, it's the same with community. You'll never know until you're in the community what you can, your greatest assets are and what you really need to work on. So, but again, like even Yeshua said, not my will be done, but your will be done. So it's something where it can't just be a catchphrase. It can't be something you think about once and put away. It's got to be a part of you, because it's not natural. It's like I said during COVID. It was like living in the twilight zone, because you're in your house and you're studying and you're hearing these things from good doctors telling you how poisonous this stuff is, and people are taking it and you're seeing them drop dead. And then you walk out of your house, and incredible doctors of 20 and 30 years are saying, no, take the shot. And it's like, I'm living here in an alternative universe. But that's the way human beings are. You know, our human nature is evil, and our human nature is selfish. And sometimes we kid ourselves, and we think that even when we do the right things, we think we're doing it for the right reasons. A lot of times we're not. A lot of times we're, and this is where we have to change. But this is where you have to get this mindset of allowing the Ruach to change your spirit from whatever individual goals you have in your life to the kingdom of Yahweh. And I've said this 100 times, the way you know how converted you are is how involved you are with the work of Yahweh. Because here it is, we're living in a world of more than 8 billion people, and Yahweh's calling 1,000th of 1%. He's calling like, you know, a few tens of thousands of people out of that 8 billion for His work. And is that first in our life, or isn't it? You know, is that the most important thing in our life, or is there 100 other things and reasons why it's not? And you can't make it that way. It's either in your heart or it's not. And it's the same way here. And like I said, if you come into a community because you're afraid, if you come because you want the end time, if you come because you don't have fellowship, if you come for any other reason, but because it's the what it's going to be forever and you need to change, it's not going to work. and you've got to build this, you know, forever. John 5 and verse 30, I am not able to do anything of my desire, Yeshua talking, but as I hear, I judge, and my judgment is just, for I don't seek my will, rather the will of him who sent me. Like I said, it's got to be a lifestyle choice. And the other thing is, once you get in community, you can't let familiarity breed contempt. Because it's going to happen. You know, I mean, when... think about it right now. Are you the exact same way with your husband, your wife, your children, the people that in your home, as you are with your boss at work, the brethren, friends outside, you know, your neighbor? Or are we different? And if we're honest, we're all to a degree different. Some of it may be little, some of it is major with people. So when you're together in community, you can't hide the things anymore. And there are people that have some big problems, you know, and believers. And they try to hide those. And you can't. So you can't allow familiarity to breed contempt. And what I've seen when we first left Babylon, wow, it was like when people that didn't want to change, when they didn't get what they want, what did they do? They didn't look inside and say, this is where I need to change. They wanted a finger to point at someone in the blame. And that happens a lot. That people want to blame somebody, and they will. It's just that simple. But like I said, every time you point the finger, you got three more coming at yourself. And at the end of the day, we are responsible for our decisions. So, you know, no matter what that decision is, and you have to, that's why when you're going into things, you have to look at things, you have to ask questions, you have to study, even becoming a believer. I never, ever try to coerce people to be baptized. The opposite. I try to make it as hard as possible. I try to make them go through hoops because I want to make sure when they're getting baptized, they're really serious about it. That it's not just a whim or, you know, something that happened at the moment, an emotional decision, but it's something that's real. So, it's against our human nature to surrender our will to Yahweh and humble ourselves before our neighbor. And this is why we have to work on this. In a community setting, truly, if one suffers, we all suffer. And if one is blessed, we're blessed. So, I've seen throughout the years, and the first year we did the Bible school, you know, 21 years now. I'll never forget that because we were in the kibbutz over there, so all the rooms were exactly the same. They were the same size, the same whatever, and people literally were jealous that someone got that room and not this room. And I said, get a measuring stick, we'll measure. And when they measured, they couldn't believe they were exactly the same size. You imagine? But that was the mindset, you know? And that was 20 years ago. Today, people don't care if they got to sleep on the floor. They don't care if they have to tent. People want to come to the school. And that's why the school, I think, is working much better because people want it more, you know? And again, in the beginning, it was different reasoning. But you've got to want it. You've got to want it because everyone's got to work on it. And in a community, you're only as strong as your weakest link. And that's why you do have to be careful. You know, and I've had people, even a couple of elders, that when they read our community manual, were a little offended at certain things. I'm going to talk like about one of them today, about in a community, you need 100% acceptance from everybody to bring in a new member. And they'd say, oh, well, that doesn't sound like something that Yahweh would do. And I said, you don't need acceptance to come into the congregation. It's Yahweh's congregation. But yes, why, if you have 30 people that are like this, and are close like anything, why would you bring in one person that is not getting along with one of the other people and have a big rift? Am I showing love to my neighbor? And you know what sometimes people say? They'll say, well, I don't have a problem with this one. Is that showing love? If I know you're having a big problem with him, how could I accept that person into the community knowing that it's going to tear the community up? That's not love. That's not love. And this is why you have every right. You have every right and responsibility of who you're going to spend your time with. Like I said, I travel halfway around the world for one baptism of anybody because Yahweh puts the people in the congregation. But I will choose who I will live with. And I'm not going to just live with anybody because I know it's going to affect me. I know it's going to affect my family. And I know it's going to affect my relationship with Yahweh. And everybody in community should be thinking the same thing. And when I have traveled, and some brethren have come to me privately and said, you know, maybe they're either criticizing the elder or criticizing this in the community, I'm like, well, have you talked with the people in the community about this? You know? And if it's not good, then why stay? We have 30 communities, they're all different. They're all different. From South Sudan, that is a real kibbutz, you come in there, everything you own goes into the community, just like the Qumran people. They eat all their meals together. It is a real kibbutz over there. It's not for everybody, you know? But that's, and we have close to 900 people there. And that is a real kibbutz. Everything from that to just people living near each other. So again, this is why, for me, I'm laying out principles of scripture to make things work. But you can't force a square peg in a round hole. You can't make people, you know, and in Africa, sometimes they want that. They want more rules. They want you to tell them what time to eat and what time to this. Like, I don't know what time is better for you to eat. It depends on you. What time is your school? What time is this? You know, and every community has got to make those rules for themselves. But you got to have rules. If you don't have rules, you're going to have problems. You're going to have big problems if you don't have rules. So you have to make sure that everybody knows the rules and they know what's expected of them. Because then you're not going to have a problem. And that's what I say. The best way, and I'll get into this in a little bit, of solving problems in the community is having rules beforehand, having protocol. I love it. And like I said, for somebody who came into the faith as a teenager that had a lot of, I was out on my own since I was a young kid. I owned my own house at 19. I owned my own business. So I wasn't really somebody that wanted to be under somebody else's jurisdiction. But when I came into the truth, I loved it. I was like, wow, I got 613 rules here? Great. So now I'm coming in with people that had a totally different lifestyle than me, but now I know what's expected of me. I don't want to offend these people, and I don't know what they eat. I don't know how they do things. I don't know their rules on courting. I know nothing. I'm coming in as a worldly guy. So now, reading all these rules, I know exactly what's expected of me. And that's the way it's got to be. It's got to be that when you come in, you know what's expected of you, and you know what you're expecting, you know, because you got there maybe things that aren't there. So entering a community is like entering a covenant agreement. It's the same thing. Because literally you're living together, you know, it's like a covenant. It's a covenant, a legal binding agreement, what's required by each side in the covenant agreement. So it's that way, and it helps everybody that's involved. Also, I believe after a community is set up, we have this rule in most of our places that there's a trial period also. It's only fair to both sides. And like I said, in life, unless everything is win-win, we shouldn't be involved. It's got to be win-win for everybody. So when you're having a community, there should be a trial period. Somebody new is coming in, you never know, for whatever reason. They might not like it. There could be problems, and we haven't had it too often, but we have had it a couple of times, where the person coming in, there was just something that didn't work out. Under one situation, they didn't really have a trial period, and then it was a big problem, because you couldn't get the person out of there. Another situation, depending on the laws of the country, like we had in one place, it was like squatters' laws. So these people even left our congregation, and you couldn't get rid of them then. And then they're playing loud music, they're living in fornication, right in the middle of our community. It's like, this is why you have to think hard and far before just accepting anybody in. You know what we had to do in that case? We had to get rid of that land and start all over again. It was okay though. They learned a lot of lessons, and that's the way it was, because what else can you do? What else can you do? We went down to the municipality, we owned the land, right? But they wouldn't take the people off of there. And the people were purposely, because they left the congregation, trying to make it harder on the other brethren. So you learn. You live and learn. And you move on. But it's important that, it's that nobody should be offended by, you know, rules and by, like I said, things like this. It's not for any one person. It's for everybody. You know, that there's a trial period. At the end of the trial period, that comes from Qumran. Because Qumran, they had a trial period, it was usually a year. And at the end of that year, again, they had white ball, black ball. And unless every single person, there was around 200 down in Qumran, unless every person white balled, that person wouldn't be allowed in. And I fully agree with that, because I just think you need to keep unity in the camp. You have to keep unity in your camp. And it's not fair to a family that might have sold everything they had, came into a community, they're living there for 5 years, 10 years in that community, everything's great, and now somebody that they have big friction with is going to come in and after everything that they invested in there and destroy for them. It's just, that to me, that's not an Elohim, you know, guided process. So, again, and it doesn't really happen much, you know, most of the time. Why would you blackball somebody? You know, what would be the reason to blackball somebody? But there have been some cases where it did happen. So it shows unity in the community. And again, unless you have that, it's hard enough when you have that unity completely, because we're human beings. Things are always going to come up. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. But to avoid it, you have to have some of these rules. So the next principle is, you have to have a kingdom community mindset. I talked about a little bit of this in the beginning. You have to have a kingdom community mindset. So the Hebrew word for kingdom, where Yahweh talked, gave man dominion over the earth. Literally the word is mamlekah, which means a kingdom. You know, Adam lost a kingdom. He did not lose a religion. And kingdom citizenship is a spiritual reality, but it's also a mentality. So, you know, one of the, I don't know if I call it downfalls, but one of the pitfalls to watch for in community living is that it's not going too good. Because sometimes it can be going so good that you lose your focus, right? That's one of the reasons why, like I said, when we were just in America, one of my older cousins asked me, you know, am I thinking about retirement? And I said, from what? You mean dying? You know, why would I retire? I don't even like taking a day off. Because when you take a day off, now you've got to get back in your rhythm again. So, yeah, when you travel a lot, whatever, you take a few extra hours traveling, whatever. But I like to keep the focus. I want to keep the focus. And what I find is, if I really, like if I had like 42 hours of travel and, you know, like you're just knocked out and then maybe you weren't feeling good and you were like sick for 2 days, I find it hard to get back into the rhythm of things. And think about anything. Think about like walking. I usually walk 45 minutes a day. Sometimes I get out of that rhythm for a month because I'm doing other things. And now getting back into it, exercising, anything. So that's why it's good just to keep that. And with a kingdom mindset, there's never a reason to come out of it. So although it is a blessing to have unity in a community, you also got to watch out that the unity and the fellowship isn't so good that you're losing sight of what you're there for. Especially if you're in a place where there's not really local ministry. You know, because the key is we always have to be focused on the kingdom of Yahweh. That's the whole reason. Even the reason why you're coming together in community is for the kingdom of Yahweh. So again, Adam didn't lose a religion, but he lost a kingdom. Kingdom citizenship is a spiritual reality, but it's also a mentality. But we need to learn the mind and the heart of living in a kingdom mentality. And that's the great part, is you do it every day. And like I said, it's different because some communities where people are living, we have places where it's a quarter of an acre. And you might have 30, 40, 50 people living in that one quarter of an acre, just living very close. So in that case, they can get together every morning and they can do their morning devotions before they even go out and they eat all their meals together. And in other places, if you're separating and you're living separate, that might not be functional to do that. You know, but you do want to make sure that, you know, a community is a group of people with common purpose. So you want to make sure you're not just meeting on Sabbath. Because then you're not a community. You don't need a community to do that. You're commanded to do that. We have to meet every Sabbath. So as a community, you need to be having community things. Community meals, community men's meetings, women meetings, Bible study, whatever. Whatever is, like I said, every place is going to be different. But you want to make sure. You want to make sure that we're not losing out on the focus of the kingdom. And you want to make sure that the foundation is good. You know, in Matthew 7, verse 24, we know without a clear foundation, the structure is going to go up and the structure is going to be condemned. So whenever we start something, we want to make sure that it is on a clear foundation. Matthew 7, verse 24 says, "Then everyone who hears these words from me and does them, I will compare him to a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain came down and the floods came up and the wind blew and fell against the house, but it did not fall, for it had been founded on the rock. And everyone who hears these words of mine and who does not do them, he shall be compared to a foolish man who built his house on the sand. And the rain came down, and the floods came up, and the winds blew and beat against the house, and it fell, and great was the collapse of it. So this is where, yes, everybody in a community, brethren come together, all have different needs. You're going to have people that are handicapped, maybe people that are in a wheelchair. You're going to have people that might have little children to take care of that have the school. You're going to have people that are elderly. So, yes, we all are going to have different requirements that we have, but at the same rate, we want to make sure that you're not building anything on the foundation of that community but the kingdom of Yahweh. That's got to be. The other things are things that you got to figure out how to work within your environment and whatnot, but we want to make sure that the foundation is straight. Because one thing that I saw many, many years ago was, like I said, sometimes when people may only see each other at the feast or see each other every now and then, wow, once you come together, it could be a totally different situation. So you want to make sure that your focus is correct in what you're doing. And like anything else in a community, there's going to be decisions that are made sometimes that you agree with, and there's going to be decisions you don't agree with. That's life. That's part of life. So unless it's something that is violating the word of Yahweh, we have to learn, like I always say, don't major in the minors. And as you get older and you realize you only have so much physical strength in your life, you got to realize you got to pick your battles, you know, because you're tired. And if you don't pick your battles, if you're fighting everything, I was like that when I was younger. I was a fighter, you know, and it was like any little thing. It was like if the electric company was 12 cents wrong on my bill, For the moral part of it, I'm going to go down there and I'm going to do this, and I take them to court and whatever, you know. And it's like, as you wear out when you do that, you know. And then you learn to pick your battles in life. The things that are important, the things that are doctrine, the things that are important to Yahweh, yes. And that's why I say, I don't mind dying for the kingdom of Yahweh. I don't mind dying for the truth, but I don't want to die, you know, for something silly. I don't want to die, you know, for the car I have or something like that. So we want to make sure that when something goes and not the decision we may have wanted, that we're not allowing it to pull us away from the truth. You know, we're taking it in stride. We have to have a mature mindset. And notice in the long run, and this is the one thing that kept the Qumran community together, that they believed that Yahweh set, and they were priests there, you know, Levites and priests, they believed that Yahweh set that leadership. So even when they felt 100% the leadership did something wrong or made the wrong decision, they trusted more in Yahweh than they did in the leadership. Because they knew that, well, if Yahweh allowed this, then there's something we're going to learn from this, and if it gets too far out of the way, Yahweh is going to handle it, you know, and we need that. That's part of faith. Part of faith is realizing in having that faith that Yahweh's going to do it. And faith is not that Yahweh's going to do it my way. It's that Yahweh will work it out. And we all know it in our life that if we get too far off course, Yahweh will pull the reins in one way or another. So we just have to trust in that. And that's where real character is made, you know, sometimes. So our motto in community has got to be the sum is worth more than the individual pieces. And as an elder, and especially, you know, the senior elder from Jerusalem for all these years, it's something that I learned a long time ago, that anything that I might think of myself, I got to put to the side. And every decision that I would make is what's best for the brethren. Now, particularly hosting the feast there for 20 years, because there'd be times where someone would come up to me, what are we doing today? Oh, we're going to go to the Mount of Olives. Oh, I already went there 3 times. I'm like, well, there's 30 people here that have never seen it, you know, and I can go there every day for my whole life. You know, one of the blessings of living in Israel was that every day of my life I was seeing biblical places, you know, and you're over there and you're seeing these things, so I could never get enough of it. But I wasn't just thinking, well, let me put a program together that's going to benefit me or what I like the most. No, you have to look at that. The sum is worth more than the individual pieces. So, you know, that's why, like I said, sometimes people would come at the feast and they'd say, oh, you know, we should have more activities, you know, and it's a single person that might be in their early 20s, and I'm like, well, you know, there's families here with kids that have to, you know, take care of that. You got to think of the big picture, you know. Oh, well, why don't we climb to the top of the mountain? Well, you know, we have people here that can barely even walk. You know, you don't want to kill somebody with this. So it's, you always have to be thinking the sum is worth more than the individual pieces. And that's why collectively, we bring together our gifts, and that's when the temple is built. You know, Yahweh's sanctuary is built when we all come together. Each of us has different gifts that are there. Maybe I'll go there now, 1 Corinthians 12. And individually, if I'm by myself, I only have certain gifts. So I'm going to have like a half-built building. I'm going to have an incomplete building. And you know what? Maybe where my gift isn't electricity, you know? So I don't have electricity in my building, or something really that's important that you can't even get a CO for your place without it. So that's the point of it is, like I said, it's got to be something where you realize, and I know I do, I can't make the kingdom where I am now. I got to change. And if I just, like, keep putting it off, man, 40 years have gone by like that. I'm 40 years in the faith. I can't believe it. And I don't have 40 more years, you know. I mean, if the kingdom doesn't come, how many more years can I live? I don't know. Yahweh does, but I'll guarantee you it won't be 40. I don't think I'm going to hit 100. That'd be pretty shocking, you know, if that would happen. So the point of it is that it goes fast, and you can't put it off any longer. Yahweh has been showing us many things in just the last 2 to 3 years how close the kingdom is now. And each of us has things in our life. The bride gets out every spot and wrinkle, and that's everybody. So there's nobody that doesn't have a spot and wrinkle that doesn't need to get it out, and that's part of what community is for. So like I said, each of us have gifts, but if we're only looking at our own gift and not the gifts we don't have, then we're going to be lacking. So 1 Corinthians 12, starting in verse 4. And there are diversity of gifts, but there is only one Spirit. And there are diversity of ministries, yet Yahweh is first. And there are diversity of powers, but the same Elohim is working all things in all. And to each one is given the manifestation of the Spirit as a help to him. For through the Spirit is given to one a word of wisdom, to another a word of knowledge, according to the same Spirit. To another, faith by the same Spirit, and to another, gifts of healing by the same Spirit, and to another, working of powers, and to another, prophecy, to another, discerning of spirits, and to another, different kinds of languages, and to another, interpretation of languages, right? What good is it if you have the gift of speaking a language and you don't know what you're saying unless that person's there to interpret? But the one in the same Spirit works all things, distributing separately to each as he wills. Even as the body is one, it has many members, but all the members of the one body being many are one body, so also is Messiah. For also we all were baptized by one Spirit into one body, whether Jews or Arameans, whether slaves or free, even all were given to drink into one Spirit. For also the body is not one member, but many. And if the foot, because says, I am not a hand, I am not of the body, on account of this, is it not of the body? And if the ear says, because I am not an eye, I am not of the body, on account of this, is it not of the body? If all the body were an eye, where would be the hearing? If all hearing, where would be the smelling? But now Elohim set the members, each one of them, in the body, even as it has pleased him. But if all was one member, where would the body be? Right? So this is where people that are against community living, and I'll never follow a man, want to be on their own. Wow, that's nothing of the kingdom of Yahweh. That is just selfish, self-serving. But now indeed, many are the members, but it is one body. And the eye is not able to say to the hand, I have no need of you, or the head to the feet, I have no need of you. But much rather, the members of the body seeming to be weaker are necessary. And those of the body we think to be less honorable, to these we put more abundant honor around them. And our dishonored members we dress with greater care. But our valued parts have no need for attention. But Elohim tempered the body together, giving more abundant honor to the members having need. That there not be division in the body, but that the members might have the same care for one another. And if one member is in pain, all the members suffer with it. If one member is honored, all the members rejoice with it. And you are the body of Messiah and members in your respective places. And Elohim placed some in the congregation, firstly apostles, secondarily prophets, thirdly teachers, workers of power, gifts of healing, helps, leaders, speakers of different languages. are all apostles, are all prophets, are all teachers, are all workers of power, do all have gifts of healing, do all speak in different languages, do all interpret. But if you are searching after the greater gifts, I will show you a more excellent way. So this is where, like I said, why we need community. Because we all are just a piece of that body, and we're not complete unless we are together. The next principle I want to get into just briefly, but it is important because most of our communities are in the third world, is that the community is not a welfare state. So like I said, where in Western society, the problem is people are not used to surrendering, never mind their mammon, but their will or anything. In the third world, people really don't have anything, but that doesn't work to their benefit either, because they think of welfare state. So many times you'll hear, you know, like, oh, community living, wow, and they look and they see that we're building this place, yeah, I'm in on it. And they might have one tiny little piece of land that's worth $200, and they don't want to give up their land. So they want, you know, they're asking me for $2,000 to build them a house and this and that. And it's like, well, what about that? Oh, no, I need that for this and that. And it's like, you know, you better pray about this a little bit more. Because if you can't think of a community as a welfare state, you know, and if that is where a community is starting, it's never going to work. And like I said, it's not really such a problem for Westerners, so to speak, in that case, but it is a problem sometimes in the third world because it's not a kingdom mindset, you know. And there are times where in the third world, because people really never had anything, sometimes they do get jealous. I remember years ago when we used to come and we would bring clothing. At that time, it was easier to transport the clothing and everything. And we learned how we had to do it because if we just started giving that stuff out, wow, it would be gone in minutes and then people would be offended. So what we started doing is like we would bring the tribal matriarchs of the congregation, the elder ladies up, and there might be 7 or 8 of them, and we would distribute it all to each of them, and then they would hand them out to the different people from the different tribes, you know, and that way it was equal that everybody got it. There were even times that some groups that are not part of us now, but were way back, where it was even the elder that was just taking the best things for his family, you know, and we had to watch with that too. So this is where you've got to watch in third world that things do not become like a welfare state. You know? So we don't really have that problem now. It started, you know, when we started 10 years ago, but I got to say, I really see the brethren in the third world growing in this regard and in doing it. So the very first kibbutz that started in Israel was a place called Degania in 1910. And the motto was, give everything you have and only take what you need. Give everything you have and only take what you need. And today, if you look at Israel, most people there are living good. They have decent money, and in these kibbutzes, the religious ones really are doing good, but it didn't start that way. They would start with a family of 5, and they would have 1 egg, not a piece, 1 egg to split 5 ways. That's their meal. And they went a year just clearing rocks before they could even think about building there. So they put in time and effort, and it wasn't easy, you know, over there. But that was what they learned. You give everything you have, but you only take what you need. And unfortunately, today in Israel, it's not the same. Out of 240 to 250 original kibbutzim, there's only about maybe 30 left because the people don't want it anymore. They want to own. They don't want to have communal living. And the ones that are left are mostly religious. It shows you again, if you don't have that common tie and belief system, it's not going to work. So it's about everybody functioning as a united team and everybody working on their spiritual gifts to the glory of Yahweh and to the betterment of everybody involved. So again, if somebody does not have a level of commitment, then they really shouldn't be involved. And it's interesting because in the kibbutzes in Israel, you can't sell it. So you could live in the thing forever. You can give it to your child, you know, that wants to. But interesting enough, most of the second generation children don't stay in the kibbutz. Maybe 30% do, and most of them leave because they want to go and make more money. So you got to make sure that the commitment level is there. And that's why, like I tell people in the areas, don't try to force people. If they don't feel convicted of it, you know, share with them your the benefits of it, share with them your testimony, but don't try to force people into community or you're going to have more problems. But it's realizing life is bigger than just the self. Life is bigger than yourself. And like I said, it's more than just a principle, it's a mindset that every community member has to put on every day and live for that. You know, I don't know if you remember the famous saying by President Kennedy years ago, "Don't ask what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country." Putting on my Boston accent there. But that's true. It is the same thing with community, you know. It's more or less that you have to be there for each other. And at the same rate, you have to also make sure, though, there's not overkill, you know. Because in a community setting, you want to help each other, but you don't want to do it to overkill, you know. And that's why you have meetings every... Community varies. It could be every week, it could be every 2 weeks, it could be once a month. And if there's problems or there's something, it's like, hey, you know what? We're having mold in our house. You know, can we get some people to help and do this and whatever? And you come and do it. But you don't want to have overkill, because we never want to forget Proverbs 25:17. Make your foot rare from your neighbor's house, lest he be full of you and hate you. So in the community, you want to make sure, especially if you're all living in the same small piece of land, you know, that you have to give people private time. And that's why as a community, you discuss how many Bible studies you're going to have, when we're going to meet, you know, and you make it where it's better for everybody. But you want to make sure that just the fact that you're living in community, that you're respecting everybody's privacy, you know. So, and the next principle I'm going to go over here is solving internal squabbles. Because, like I said, no matter how good the community could be, no matter how close people are, it's inevitable with human beings, problems are going to come. And what I have found through the years, because most people would think, oh, the problem comes from a doctrine or the problem... I found very, very rarely, if ever, did it come from a doctrine or something congregational. It's mostly a small point. It's mostly something where... somebody got offended over something, or somebody said something rude to somebody else and they didn't apologize. It's usually all the small stuff that winds up boiling over, and usually not a major rift with doctrine. The other thing you want to make sure, because this also happens at times, and I've even seen it happen in the third world, you want to make sure there's not nepotism. You know, because nepotism will destroy it, especially with your leadership. Because if people are trusting in the leadership, and then they're perceiving that the leadership is not being fair, and you know they're giving preference, the elder is giving preference to his family above everything, you're going to have problems. Particularly with workload too, you know. So the workload is usually divided up, and you want to make sure that that is not there. So, like I say. The best way to solve disagreements is to have proper protocol and avenues to stop them from happening in the first place. You know, you have to make rules and then you have to keep them. So you got to follow the congregational protocol. And the other thing is, protocol is not doctrine. And I see this sometimes, this happens in Africa, because Africans, for the most part, are very straight people. You tell them something, and that's it. They'll do it. They don't ask questions. But that's why I say, with protocol, it's different. It's different in different areas. It's different depending on who's in the area. It's different depending on where you're living. You know, you might have a protocol of, in one area, that there's no parking in front of the congregational hall, for whatever reason. In another area, there might not even be cars. So you wouldn't need that protocol. So you want to make sure that even once you set your protocol, and this is why you have meetings, like I said, either every week, every 2 weeks, every month, because if there's a protocol that's not functional, you discuss it, you know? And if it's not a doctrine that's scriptural, you know, you could modify it or change it if you have to. So this is where dialogue helps. And of course, One of the most important things with limiting internal squabbles is loving your neighbor as yourself. You know, the golden rule, we have to think about this. And like I said, sometimes it might be something where maybe you didn't think was the best idea, but it's not that big of an idea. So you're just going to let it go. It's not worth arguing over. 1 John 3:16 through 18. John 3:16-18 says, "By this we have known his love toward us, because that one laid down his life for us, and on behalf of the brethren we ought to lay down our lives. But whoever has worldly possessions and sees his brother in need and shuts up his mercy on him, how is the love of Elohim in him? My little children, let us not love in word or tongue, but in deed and truth." And I can honestly say in 10 years, I really have not seen a problem with this scripture. I've seen the opposite. I've seen people willing to help in any way they can, in any kind of situation. But, you know, it's in our manual, and we put it here that we know it, but I don't really see this as a problem. You know, people are really willing to help. And like I said, it's usually just smaller things that turn into bigger things. So we need to, like I said, have the either weekly, bi-weekly, or monthly meetings. And the second thing, most important thing, is using the Matthew 18 process. Matthew 18 process is not just a process for somebody in the congregation that's sinning. But Matthew 18 should be the main way we solve all our problems. Because it's like I said, Yahweh works in principles. And Matthew 18 is a very simple principle. If you have a problem, you go to that person and you solve the problem. You know, very clear. So, and especially in a community, you don't want to be discussing in the community and bad-mouthing, particularly sometimes with elders, you know, like, oh, they didn't like what the elder did, and you're going to bad-mouth. You don't want to be doing that, because what you're doing is, then you're bringing it even bigger than just your problem. You're destroying the whole judicial order structure of the congregation there. So the easiest thing to do is, if there's a problem with a brother or sister, you go to them privately, and you try to work the problem out. You pray about it first. If it's something really, really serious, even fast about it, but you go and you try to work it out. Galatians 6 and verse 1. "Brothers, if any man among you goes before you in error, who you were in the Spirit, restore him by the Spirit of gentleness, and beware lest temptation also comes upon him." So like I said, you can use this for any situation. You can use it for a private situation where somebody offended you. Maybe they just said something that they shouldn't have. But also, let's say somebody's in the congregation and you saw them doing something that is actually sin. What if you saw them like working or cooking on Sabbath? You don't have to go to the elder and tell the elder right away, "Oh, I saw something." No, you go to the person. Maybe they didn't even understand it, that was a violation. So you go to them and you share, "You know, you probably didn't realize it, and I know you probably had a real hard week, but do you know you were actually cooking that food on Sabbath?" "Oh, I didn't realize." But if they come out and say, "Well, you can cook on Sabbath. There's nothing wrong with cooking on Sabbath." "All right, I was just bringing up, maybe we should talk to Elder Don then." Or, you know, then, like I said, if the person doesn't accept it, then you get two witnesses involved. If they don't listen to the witnesses, you bring it to the elder. If it's a matter of sin, you might not even need the witnesses. You might just go right to the elder. Deuteronomy 19 and verse 15, "One witness will not rise against a man for any inquiry or for any sin. In any sin which he sins, at the mouth of two witnesses or at the mouth of three witnesses, the thing will be established." So when you're given an example like that, right, I think everybody can know we don't cook on Shabbat, and if somebody's in there cooking, frying an egg or whatever, you're violating Shabbat. But what I've also seen is that sometimes where somebody thinks somebody else is violating something, they may not be. It's not as simple as you think, and that's why you need at least two witnesses. Because maybe you perceive something that really wasn't there. So you want to make sure you have witnesses if it's something that is sinful in nature. And if it is just something personal, then just go to that person. Just go privately. And, you know, sometimes I've actually seen people's friendships really grow through that. Where, you know, something that might have been affecting the one person, and they went to the person didn't even realize they were doing it, and then they hug, and, you know, their friendship grows from there. And again, if the parties cannot come to a solution, then of course you've got to get the elders involved. Matthew 17, Matthew 18:17-18. But if he fails to hear them, tell it to the congregation. But if he also fails to hear the congregation, let him be to you as a tax collector and a heathen. Truly I say to you, whatever you bind on the earth will be, having been bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on the earth will be, having been loosed in heaven. So, and this is where it's a very tricky situation for the leadership. At what point do you announce to the congregation of something? Because if it's a private matter, and it's solved between the parties, there's really no reason to bring it public. But if it can't be solved privately, and it did have to come before the congregation, there's a point where you really owe it to the congregation to tell the congregation if something's going on there that they don't know. You know, maybe it's a situation that's something really bad. You know, maybe there was a fornication or something, or somebody that doing something that needs to be warned to the brethren. You know, there could be somebody with a sin of alcoholism or whatever. So there is a point where if the person is not changing or accepting it, that it would have to come before the congregation, and that's just something that the elders would have to decide. And I try to, at all costs, not to do it. I try not to have to bring something public, but there is a time where you do have to. There's a time where it wouldn't be fair, you know. And there's even been situations where somebody that I know was invited to somebody's house to stay with them, and I know this person has had a problem in the past, and I'll go to them and say, to be honest, as the elder, I don't feel comfortable with you going in there unless you share with them the problem you had. I know you're overcome it, but you really owe it to them to share your problem, and you know, and then you work it out between them. But I gotta let you know, if you don't tell them, I will. You know, when it's something really serious, maybe somebody was arrested for child molestation, and they have a prison record, right? And now they're going in, going to live with somebody for 2 months that has 6 kids. You have to let them know. But there's always another side. Maybe they were 18 years old, and it was that they had a girlfriend that was 17. And they were going to get married, but the father didn't let them. So that's what I'm saying. There's a lot to these situations, and that's why it really takes a lot of prayer and maturity on it. But there are times where you do need to share with somebody, you know, of something that could be in your past, especially if you're going to be staying in somebody's house. Or even with them in community, it should be coming out, those kind of things. And again, it's important that community members respect the judgments that are made after that that come. And sometimes, like I said, 1 Corinthians 6:7 says, indeed then, there is already a failure with you that you have lawsuits with yourself. Why not instead be wrong? Why not instead be defrauded? I think about it. Wow, way back then, they were suing each other in court. You know, but I guess they were. It wouldn't be in the Bible. But it's important that sometimes you grow in faith that way too. That, you know, you learn to just be wronged in a certain situation, but not all situations. There are times where you should stand for the truth. And if there was something that is a violation of Scripture or something, that you shouldn't just stand back and say, because that's not a win-win situation, you know. So you have to pray about it, and you have to know, like the Bible says, there's a time to stand up, there's a time to stand down. And in a community, it can break or make the community, knowing when that time is, you know. But if it's the word of Yahweh, you always got to stand for it. You have to make sure of that. And again, this is what kept Qumran together for close to 270 years. Not that everything that was done and the decisions were all correct, but that they trusted in Yahweh being over it altogether. Like I said, 1 Timothy 5:21, I adjure you before Yahweh and the Master Yeshua Messiah and the elect cherubs that you should observe these things without prejudice, doing nothing by way of partiality. You know, so the same way Yeshua had the 70, the 12, and the 3, you know, he had the 70 disciples, he had his 12 apostles, then he had his 3 inner circle. You know, I say this in our life, everybody should have an inner circle. And for me, my biggest responsibility is the Jerusalem Council. And I tell those men with me, because I say, we are the council between heaven and earth, you know, from Yahweh to us to the earth. And we better take this serious. And there should never be any time for any elder or any brother or sister, period. But I really stress it with those council members with me that if the brethren can't trust in us, we're in trouble. And we have to have the utmost you know, make sure that never, ever, ever is there any kind of dispute, not only nepotism, but just that anything that is you know, being done 100% according to the will of Yahweh. The last thing I want to go over is the servant attitude. Matthew 20 and verse 25. Matthew 20 and verse 25. It says, and Yeshua called to them and said to them, you know the rulers of the Gentiles are their masters, and their nobles are in authority over them. But it will not be so among you, but whoever desires to become great among you, let him be your servant. And whoever desires to be first among you, let him be your servant. Even as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. So, again, that's what community is all about. And you know what? And one of the reasons why I tell the brethren not to try to push or coerce people that aren't ready for community yet is, I actually respect somebody that would come up to me to say, you know, I'm just not ready for it yet. I'm too selfish. You know, I know I need to get there. I know I got to work on it, but I'm just not there yet. I'd appreciate that more than somebody coming to a community being that way and not understanding it. So that's why I say it's a process. Our calling is a process. For me, the hardest thing right now is as we're getting closer to the end, and there's still a lot of new people coming into the faith, and it's, how do you get those people, you know, that are new, where do you bring them? They're not ready for community yet, so what's that step? And that's what I'm praying to Yahweh for. You know, what should they be doing preparing themselves, you know, so that maybe in a short time they are ready to go to a community somewhere. And that's what I'm hoping Yahweh will give the answer. So, judicial order, like I said, is voluntary and reciprocal, just as it is in a community. It's voluntary and reciprocal. Nobody's being forced in community, but we do have to serve each other. Decisions should always be made in love and kindness. And like I said, as long as repentance is made, we have to have an attitude of mercy, not sacrifice. So the one thing is, you know, Yahweh says he puts our sins between the east and the west, and in a community you got to do the same thing. You got to let things go. You can't hold on to grudges or this or, you know, something that somebody did a year ago, or again, it'll just be a cancer. Matthew 9:13, but going, learn what is said, I desire mercy and not sacrifice, for I did not come to call righteous ones but sinners to repentance. And we have to give people opportunity, you know. So, you know, when Peter came and said, Master, when my brother sins against me, how many times should I forgive him? Seven. And what did he say? 77 times 77. So, we expect Yahweh to do that for us. And we ask, every day we ask him for forgiveness where we fall short. So we have to be the same with each other. We have to make sure we're forgiven. Last scripture I'm going to go over here is Romans 12. Verse 17. Romans 12 and verse 17 says, returning evil for evil to no one, providing right things before all men. If possible, as far as it depends on you, live in peace with all men, not avenging yourself, beloved, but giving place to wrath, for it has been written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says Yahweh. Then if your enemy hungers, feed him. If he thirsts, give him drink. For doing this, you will heap coals of fire on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome the evil with good. And in our last Remnants Walk, not the one that just came out, but the one before that, I had a really good article on that. You know, what it means to turn the other cheek. Because a lot of times people don't understand it. And they think turning the other cheek is just being a doormat. And letting people violate you and take advantage of you. That is not turning the other cheek. Turning the other cheek is where you are taking control. That you are not being passive and just letting someone steal. And because that's not righteous. It's where you're choosing. So when someone says, will you go with me a mile? You say, I won't only go one. I'll go two. They're not forcing you, you are making that choice. So this is what being a new covenant believer is about. You know, it's about being offensive for the good. So it's where, yes, if somebody asks me for my cloak, I'll give him the cloak also, but he's not stealing it from me. I'm giving it to him. It's my conscious decision to do more. And that's what community is about. It's about we are making the decision to do as much as we can for Yahweh and for each other. And in all situations, we want to make sure that everything is win-win. Because like I said, it's not enough sometimes just because you don't want to fight with somebody that you let something go. Maybe somebody stole something that was yours and you're just like, ah, I don't want to. No, if something is wrong, you have to stand up for what's true. So if you want to give something to someone, that's different. That is your offensive choice to give. But if someone is stealing it from you, you have to stand up for what's right because you're not helping the person to allow them to violate Yahweh's law and let them get away with it. That's not win-win. So, and the last thing is we always have to remember, we are in the underground congregation. So I have people write me now all the time. You know, somebody just wrote me this week asking me, give them a copy of all the locations of all of our communities where they are. And I mean, they don't understand. So they're not saying it in an evil way. They're just, you know, maybe thinking of, whoa, well, where are these that I could see? And they're not understanding we're part of the underground congregation. In the last year, we've had elders that have been arrested. We've had congregations that were violated. And just recently, we had one of our brethren shot dead by 5 people coming back from services. So, you know, it's serious. And it is life and death. So we want to make sure we are not giving out private information. And, you know, the same way. Who will I tell where I'm living? Somebody that's coming to visit me. If you're not coming to my house, why do you want to know what my address is? Or why do you want to know where I'm living? Just to know it. And it's, you know what it is? It's not only that I'm not showing love to the people with me by violating that. I'm not showing love to that person. Because what happens if that person is taken by the secret police and beat up until he tells where I am? So it's better not to know. It's better not to know. But, and third world people don't always understand it. First world people really don't understand because it's not part of our society. Our society is Facebook and internet and everything in your life is just open and known. But in an underground congregation, it can't be that way. You know, it really can't be that way. And we talked a lot, I did, at the Bible school this year, a whole course on the underground congregation and from many different avenues, you know, of talking about it. But it is important because, like they say, loose lips sinks ships. And you never want to give out personal information or whereabouts of somebody person or in the community because literally you can jeopardize people's lives. You can jeopardize their lives. We're living in times where laws are really serious. People can lose their children. There's all kinds of things that not only can happen, are happening. So we want to make sure we're being really serious and that unless somebody, it's a need-to-know basis. You know, in general terms, you can tell people what it's like to live in community. You can tell them, you know, what you're learning. You can, you know, lessons like this I'm giving here. This will probably go out to all the brethren, but I didn't give any personal information on any one of our 30 places around the world, you know, because it's a need-to-know basis. And even when somebody is contacting me from the country, I'll contact the elder, I'll have the elder contact the person, and usually that elder will meet the person, you know, before giving any information. They'll meet them somewhere and whatnot, because we have to think about this. It's the times that we're living in. And like I said, boy, if COVID didn't show us how quick the government can come down and shut you down and not let you buy food and all the other things, not get on an airplane, not travel, and it didn't go away. And the next one that comes is going to be much worse than that. So we know there's a great martyrism, and we're pretty much there at that fifth seal, so we have to see. So I will stop here. If somebody can turn off the recorder.